and it makes us weaker. It makes us more isolated, and it leaves us in a situation where all of the major challenges this country faces and the working families in this country face are getting worse rather than better, because we're not leading, we're not working with others, we're not solving these problems that require cooperative solutions in many different countries all pulling together in the same direction.
In association with Business Forward, this is Answering America. I'm your host, Ed Meyer.
And I'm Jim Doyle, president of Business Forward Foundation.
And I'm Allie Berry, also with Business Forward.
On today's episode, we're asking the question, is America better off going it alone? We're speaking with Detroit businessman Cornelius Harris. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Alter Ego Management.
Alter Ego Management is a management company around musical artists, primarily electronic artists based out of Detroit. We also do a lot of cultural advocacy and things like that. We do that in Detroit, but then we also do that on a global scale, depending on wherever we happen to work and have our artists.
Talk to us about where you work. You travel a lot internationally. Tell us some of the countries that you travel to, and what have you seen and heard from your overseas colleagues about our country and our president?
At least in my experience, what's been happening, in terms of where I do the business, a lot of it is in Europe. Sometimes we do stuff in Japan and also in South America. But for the most part, it tends to be in Europe. And I can say that, unfortunately, the response I tend to get is more condolences.
Can you tell us about any examples or experiences that you've had where the president's foreign policy has impacted either your business or other American businesses you've seen?
There are examples of festivals that had musical artists who are trying to come to the U.S. to perform and show their music, and they've been basically blocked. Festivals and other organizations and events have lost tens of thousands of dollars. The way the entertainment work is that before one is granted an application, you have to show that there's a contract that's been signed and that basically the business has already started prior to a visa being granted for somebody. The problem is, if a promoter or a venue goes and puts all this work together, they do the contract, they have the exchange of money, and then all of a sudden it doesn't go through, well, now they have to refund all of the people who bought tickets. There's the venue costs. There's all of this lost money. Truth be told, we've got some concerns around Brexit. We sell a lot of music in the UK, and we work with UK distributors. But in terms of those distributors and then being able to get product over into Europe from mainland, that becomes an issue and a question. So there's just a lot of question marks, and it makes things very unstable because it's difficult to plan ahead when you know that everything could change at the drop of a hat.
Cornelius, who should I be listening to if I want to be cool these days? Give me a couple of musical artists. I want to be cool. I want to impress my kids and friends.
Check out any of the classic house music out of Chicago, Underground Resistance, Juan Atkins and Model 500, and Derek May. There's some really cool up-and-coming performers.
Right on. Well, thank you so much, Cornelius. Really appreciate your time with us today.
No, I really appreciate it.
Our next guest on the podcast is Jake Sullivan, former National Security Advisor to Vice President Biden and Deputy Policy Planning Director of the State Department, and currently the Distinguished Fellow at Dartmouth College. Welcome to the podcast, Jake.
Thanks for having me.
President Trump views the U.S. global engagement broadly with deep skepticism, and his presidency has raised questions around whether America can lead in the world and whether we should be leading in the world. And a lot of people nod in agreement when President Trump talks about America first and thinks it's been a long time coming. So what is President Trump's America first exactly, and how do you think it's working?
What America first boils down to is that we should abandon our friends and allies. We should go it alone. And we should just look out for number one at the expense of everyone else. And if anyone else is doing well, it must necessarily mean that that's coming at our expense. What that basically means is no cooperation with other countries on problems that require multilateral solutions. It means not having friends to stand with us as we try to deal with the trade abuses and other abuses from countries like China. It means that when we've got a problem that we need help from others to solve, whether it's dealing with terrorism in the Middle East or nuclear proliferation or climate change, we can't rally the world to be able to solve those problems. And it makes us weaker. It makes us more isolated. And it leaves us in a situation where all of the major challenges this country faces and the working families in this country face are getting worse rather than better, because we're not leading, we're not working with others, we're not solving these problems that require cooperative solutions in many different countries all pulling together in the same direction.
So business leaders that Business Forward works with look at key performance indicators to tell them how well their companies are doing vis-a-vis their competitors. And we've seen the global view of the United States declining significantly under President Trump. Can you talk about how the decline in international respect for the United States can be quantified? How does a business leader think about this decline in global goodwill in some sort of meaningful, quantifiable way?
Well, I'll give you two metrics. One metric is the very well-developed public opinion research that both Pew and Gallup do, which test the opinion of populations in countries around the world of their view of the United States, its leadership, its moral authority, and so forth. And we're not scoring well on those metrics by any stretch. For the first time ever in the last year, China's leadership in the world is more respected than the United States' leadership. Well, why does that matter? Because the U.S. has typically relied on what we call soft power. It's relied on its moral suasion, on its ability to rally support from countries around the world in order to set the rules of the road, in order to define the standards of the global economy. And as China gains its soft power, becomes more respected than us, their capacity to get other countries to go along with them on everything from technology and trade rules to speech grows. And that will put U.S. businesses at a disadvantage, because it will mean that China will be able to tilt the rules of the global economy in their favor at the expense of the American private sector. And the second metric is the strength of America's alliances and partnerships around the world. If you just look at President Trump's most recent trip to NATO, where heads of state from multiple different countries were literally laughing at the American president, you know, that isn't actually a joke. That's serious business. That means that the so-called leader of the free world is not seen as a leader anymore. And that comes at a material cost to the United States' ability to stand up for, advocate for, and effectively represent the interests of Americans, including American small businesses, American workers, and American consumers.
You talk about China, and that's an area I want to drill down on just a little bit. That's one of the foreign policy concerns that we hear about the most from business leaders. They see China as a global competitor, and they see China spending trillions of dollars around the world on a vast network of railways and energy pipelines and ports and highways and 5G networks. And they see China is now starting to out-invest us in technology and R&D. And at the same time, they're stealing our intellectual property and cheating on trade. President Trump has talked tough on China. What does he actually get right about this, and where is he wrong, and what should our approach be?
Well, he's right in a important but very narrow sense. He's right that the United States needs to take a tougher line vis-a-vis China. Then he's wrong, basically everything that flows from that. The way that he structured this trade war, which is basically to have American farmers, American families, American businesses bear the burden without actually producing any results. To date, all these months in, the president hasn't produced a thing in terms of Chinese reform or changes to China's trade practices or abuses. And even the deal that he's discussing right now, this quote-unquote phase one deal, won't change any of the underlying structural problems with China's approach to the international economy. It'll be a headline to help him politically, but it won't help American businesses. And then the next point I would make is that the only really effective way to deal with a country like China is to do so with a united front of like-minded market economies, our friends in Europe and Asia and elsewhere, who together represent 60% of the world's economy and therefore have enormous leverage over China, which only represents 15%. But instead of rallying the world to come up with a set of terms that brings China along, that makes them change their abuses, open their markets, stop subsidizing their companies to create unfair competition against American and European companies. Trump has decided to open a multi-front war to attack the Europeans, to impose tariffs on various sectors in Europe, in Latin America, and elsewhere. And I think that's wrong-headed, because at a moment when we should be pulling the world together vis-a-vis China, China is actually able to get sympathy and support from those countries and put the United States at a further disadvantage. And that brings me to my final point, which is, at the end of the day, what this trade war is doing is letting the rest of the world off the hook. So European companies, Japanese companies, Argentine and Brazilian companies, they all can benefit from the fact that it's the American private sector that's taking it on the chin in Donald Trump's trade war. And that's why I think the approach that's required is one where that burden is shared across all of those different economies and is not entirely borne by the United States.
It sounds like the next president's going to have a pretty big book of business in terms of repairing all the foreign policy damage that's been done. And certainly from your perspective and your answers, it sounds like repairing these or rebuilding these alliances is going to be task number one. But how are we going to do that? How do we convince our allies that 4 years later, we're not just going to turn our backs on them again? Is there any secret formula to actually going about and rebuilding this trust and repairing all the foreign policy damage that's been done?
Well, let me say two things to that. The first is that we need to start by walking the walk at home. And that means not thinking about foreign policy and domestic policy as in two separate silos, but as all part of the same project of strengthening our country and supporting our people. And that means we got to make major investments here in infrastructure and innovation, science and technology and R&D, good paying jobs. It means that we need to repair and restore our democracy and to deal with the problems of economic inequality. And we have to think about those as all part of an effort to reestablish the United States as a beacon and a model for the world. And then the second is we've got to go out and show rather than just tell the rest of the world that we're back in the game. Actually put our money where our mouth is on issues from climate change to trade and economic policy. If you think about the places where Republicans have pushed back on President Trump, it's mostly been in the foreign policy space, where if you thought about some of the alternatives for a Republican president who would come after Trump, a Nikki Haley or a Mike Pence or a Marco Rubio or a Mitt Romney, these voices of the Republican Party, none of them hold contempt for our alliances. None of them want to turn America's back on the world. And while I may disagree with them in the particulars and I disagree with them on domestic policy, I actually believe we can make a credible case to the rest of the world that on this set of issues, it's not about where the American people are. It's not even about really where the Republican Party is. It's just where Trump is. And if we can move beyond Trump, we can reestablish a new consensus around an effective American engagement with the world.
Jake Sullivan, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. We truly appreciate your perspective and your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And for more facts, data, and analysis, visit answeringamerica.org and read all about the questions that business leaders are asking across America. Thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to talking to you on the next episode. Answering America is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Ed Meyer, and Jim Doyle. Produced by Jim Scott Polsonelli and Michael Herrenstein. Engineered by Mason Carlton. Recorded at Powerhouse Studios in Alexandria, Virginia. Special thanks to Caitlin Bruckner and the Business Forward team, Ali Berry, Jana Platt, Alex Passanen, Susie Fitzgerald, Alexia Lipman, and Colin Buchanan. Thanks for listening. See you next time.